You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1, for workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.
Manny, bon dia.
Bon dia. What's going on, Phil?
You know, another day, another exciting podcast.
Now we start steamrolling, letting everybody know Safety Corner is coming hard. We got a lot to talk about.
We do have lots to talk
about. But we got a guest today.
We do have a guest today, and we're going to introduce our guest. Our guest, his name is Tim Cole. He's a health and safety professional. And Tim, thanks for coming in.
Bon dia, gentlemen. Bon dia.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Not bad for a munchy cake, but I'm doing okay.
You're Portuguese, man. Your Portuguese is getting better.
You're on my level. A little bit of construction. Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, Portuguese may become the next official language over here.
English, Portuguese, French.
Okay. Just a mix.
All right.
So, Tim, thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for the invite.
It's awesome.
Tell us a bit about yourself, what you do, what's going on, what's happening.
Well, shameless self-promotion, I am that safety guy. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. And
under that dot safety dot guy.
Yeah, for Instagram, TikTok is just that safety guy, and YouTube is that safety guy 6'8".
6'8", on YouTube.
These all started by accident. They were kind of cathartic, because when I first got into safety, 2013.
Uh-huh.
That was gun and badge. Your ex-ministry, you know, you understand gun and badge.
I do.
Like, I'd rattle guys' cages for no safety glasses and just go off the top. And that didn't get me anywhere. And then I got complacent. I said, you know what? You want to do something dumb? You want to get hurt? Go ahead. Not my problem. And then I got to where I am now. I've grown since 2013. But the crux of the point behind these, what started with the videos, was I should videotape myself before I go off on somebody.
To see the calm before the storm.
Just teach myself how to communicate better.
Yeah. Mm.
So I'd go on these rants, and if you go back to like 2019 on YouTube, you can see the progression. But I would I'd go off and I'd watch myself and go, okay, I can't say that. So I need to approach it a different way.
You're policing yourself?
Well, I was.
Constructive criticism. It's like looking in the mirror.
Yeah, I was trying. I was literally trying to be an educator.
Yeah, and right? Listen.
And it just kind of went from there.
I've been following you a long time on Instagram, and you know, I like what you say and I like what you do. And the reality is a lot of safety professionals in this business, you know, we have a lot of the similar goals. You know, and Tim can go into some of the detail of his work experience and stuff, but we have a lot of the similar goals. We have ways that we want to achieve them, and everyone has their own flavor and their own style. And that's what it really comes down to being a safety professional is, you know, it's personality, it's communication, it's knowledge, it's your ability to get people on board with what you're trying to accomplish and what your goals are and what you're trying to sell.
Yeah, really. Exactly. Yeah.
Does it really seem simple to you guys and very complicated to everybody else?
Safety in general?
Yeah.
Listen, I think learning all about the rules is probably the easiest part.
Okay. Applying them,
right? And communication, like getting people on board. You're trying to convince people that, you know, this way is the safest way or the better way. Right?
Has safety made you guys a better communicator?
Tim, I'll let you.
Well,
construction wise, I'm always talking about.
Construction wise, I mean, so we talked about this before we got on here. I'm former military.
Yeah.
And I was a trainer in the military as well. Sure. Part of my, like, you have to train your subordinates. Yeah. So I kind of learned that craft that way. But, you know, since 2013, I've definitely been able to. I've improved my ability to communicate, and that's just it. If they don't understand what you're saying, because there's some safety people out there, they've got, you know, they went to George Brown, or they've got a formal education in health and safety.
Not knocking it. I'm just saying.
Exactly. But they approach it differently.
Yeah.
Right? And they use the big $10 words. But if you're talking to a roofer from, say, Ecuador, you're talking to, you know, João
or Manuel Pacheco Melo, that guy.
But you have to be able to speak in crayon.
Yes.
And to speak in crayon is not an insult. It's bring it down to the worker's level.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I was on the tools for so long before I got into safety, I've got that experience, right? So when I tell guys, when if I do orientation, this might come back to bite me, but I'm a lazy safety guy. I don't like doing paperwork. Don't do dumb shit. I don't got to do paperwork.
Yeah. Hey, no, no. That math adds up.
Right.
Yeah,
right. And because I've got experience, you know, I'm a tower crane operator. I'm a heavy equipment operator. I'm a carpenter. I'm a cabinet maker. I'm an electrician. Second year, third year plumber.
Holy shit.
Right. I've got it. Right.
So where do you have all this time, Tim? Yeah. Holy, this guy.
Thank you again for coming in.
I don't do it now. Now safety is my full thing. But because of that experience and being on the tools and high rise in Toronto.
Well-rounded amount of experience.
Yeah, I can do this.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I know why they're trying to take their shortcut. So I can approach it now differently to say, you know, why are you standing on the mid rail of that elevated work platform? Why?
Because he can't reach.
Because he's at the truss, but he's got to get to the sky deck.
Yeah.
Listen, how can we do that safely?
Tim, you hit the nail on the head, man. And when it comes down to safety professional, well-rounded safety professionals, people with experience is vital and key. You know, it's nothing worse than having to explain something to a safety professional and they have no understanding of what the scope of the work is, and you're trying to explain how to do it, and they don't understand, and all they understand is the regulations. And it's like, well, you can't do that. Well, explain to me how I'm going to do it. Oh, I don't know. You know, it's you have to kind of be into it, man. You got to eat it and breathe it, right? I mean,
do you know why this toolbox talks? Because I'm an idiot worker. The green book is so thick because of me, personally. There's nothing I haven't tried, done, or gotten hurt by because I was a horrible worker. I took shortcuts.
Did I told get the charged?
Safety, nope. I have told the Ministry of Labor to screw off. I've told, not so, maybe more colorful. I told safety guys to go fucking bite me.
Oh, you're that guy.
I was that guy. And come now on, I'm the safety guy. Damn. And I get told that all the time. Because, right? So, but I have that
guy's made you a better safety guy.
It's made me a better safety guy.
Yeah. Which is good.
Yeah.
Right. And your experience is what kind of shapes you in this industry. And if you've been in this industry long enough, you know, there's a difference between being fresh coming out of school or I just became a safety person. Yay. And versus I've been doing this for a lot of years. And Tim, obviously, with a, you know, military background and training background and apparently all these other certifications that he has.
Built a city.
Holy cow. This is the one man show over here. But yeah, man. So yeah, it's good. And I'm glad you're here and talking about your challenges and your experiences and stuff like that. You know, because it's good for everybody to see the different types of people that are out there protecting, right? So tell us a bit about some of the projects you work on and what's your role there?
Well, generally speaking, I mean, so I work for a consulting company.
Say their name. Come on, Tim. Say the name.
I like those guys.
No, I wasn't advised not to. I'm trying to keep this as that then safety guy's
opinion. Don't worry. Don't worry about that.
Right? Because that way it doesn't affect the guy who pays my paycheck. He's a hell of a guy.
If you want to reach out to Tim and talk to him and have a conversation with him.
It's right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you can reach out to him and then he can let you know who the company is or whatever.
I mean, it's a great company. It is absolutely a great company. This is my 10th year.
Me and Manny were talking about it, and it's the only company that I would recommend other than mine.
Well, obviously. It's because of that company that you and I met. Because I taught one of your clients.
Yeah,
first aid.
He came in to do training, a confined space training for one of my clients. Maybe about 4 years ago or something.
It was before the stupid times. Yeah,
you were on loaner. You're a mercenary that day.
Yeah,
whoever paid the highest, that's where he was going.
So you don't need to say it, but if you heard the previous show, then you'll know exactly what we're talking about.
Well,
so
exactly.
And technically, we get around the fact that you don't want to say it, which is fine.
Exactly. So what do I do every day?
We still like you, Kevin.
Generally speaking, right? I'll get a route. I'll get like 15 clients I got to hit in a week.
Yeah.
And that could be anywhere from, because I live in Toronto, so I get from, say, Oakville to Whitby.
Okay.
Right? I've gone up to Ottawa. We have a part of who I work for. We have an office in Ottawa as well. So nice. I go up there and help fill in there.
Some traveling and stuff like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll hit a couple low rises. I'll hit a couple high rises. We're either dealing with, we're there for the constructor or we're there for the employer.
Sure.
Generally speaking, we're there for the constructor. With the company I work for, we also get into large breweries. We've been there for 11 years.
How's the Christmas gifts on that one?
What I don't know.
Do you get a case or two?
It's all chocolates. It's got nothing to do with alcohol.
No, exactly. Right now I'm in a cookie factory where they make natural granola. That's where they get the beer. Well, they gave us, so the owner of the company came in yesterday and they're very impressed with the fact that we're doing it as safe as we are. and that's a whole other story, and that we're on track. It's got a really, really, really tight time constraints for this project.
A construction project on time?
No, this one is crazy, like crazy tight, like nuts tight. And we're like, and they keep throwing curveballs at us. So yesterday we had our Christmas site lunch. And of course, we had the Portuguese chicken and the balls and all that stuff.
What else would you be eating at a Christmas?
Exactly.
Lunch? I wanted
bus up shot. I wanted bus up shot.
With those little round potatoes?
I even brought some home. But anyway, so the owner of the company says, you know, I want to give the whole team something, like all the workers. So we think, oh, we're going to get a bag of granola or whatever. He brought out like 5 pallets. Everybody gets a box each, like a box, like 10 each. And I think today or Monday before Christmas break, he's bringing us all the sweet stuff. So that's the appreciation part.
That's nice. That's nice.
But
so that's for sure.
Yeah. So back to what do I do? I work for a microtunneling firm. I've done a wind tower. I did a wind farm in Grand Bend.
Holy shit. That must be exciting.
That was cool. 190 or 95 meter towers.
I think that's one of the pros of this job too, man. You get to go into so many different types of construction projects, you know, from tunnels to high rises to low rise to
Shopify.
What about Shopify?
Event safety. We did event safety.
Oh, that's
we
pretty
did,
interesting.
We did the setup for Shopify.
Wow.
Get behind Oz's curtain.
Hmm.
I actually called out the owner of Shopify for riding an electric skateboard through a crowded venue. I didn't know who he was. Because you know who I am? I said, do you know who I am? Well, I'm so and so.
He's one of those.
I go, you hired me to make sure that you don't go to jail for this event.
So he did that right in front of you?
He didn't. He had no idea who I was.
What's the problem riding a skateboard?
In a crowded venue, like 1,500 people.
A little, man.
Right? Yeah. So I was very polite. We had a conversation. I said, you really shouldn't do that.
Did you videotape yourself before you started speaking?
No, I couldn't do that one either because it would have just shot everything out of the water, but... Well, everybody's equal, right?
Listen, it's the rules apply for everybody, whether you're top or the bottom.
You got to lead from the top.
Yeah, you have to, man. You have to. So we have a nice little video here. This is one of your most recent posts, workplace incidents. But if you check Tim out on Instagram, that.safety.guy, there's a whole bunch of little videos here of challenges that Tim faces and how he's addressing them and stuff like that. And I can relate with a lot of these videos, man. I've been in that position, you know, as a safety professional, discussing and listening and trying to solve problems and dealing with these challenges, you know. And some of these things are frustrating, man, because you try to tell people, you're like, hey, that's not right, man. And everyone can see that it's not right.
You know it's not right.
You don't even need to be a rocket scientist to figure this one out, man. And we're going to go into some of these pictures that Tim set up here.
So these are videos, Tim, that you just share as your day is progressing. You're going to different...
Or something happens comes up, and I'm just like, I got to get that out there.
Something
I gotta,
tugged on his beard. Yeah, got him a little riled up.
get it out of my head so I can sleep at night, yeah.
You can find Tim at Yorkdale Mall. There's a Yorkdale Mall Santa Claus this next week.
Santa wearing a hard hat?
Yeah,
probably. The biker elf.
No, man.
The biker elf.
I don't know how you do it, man. I honestly, mine gets a little long and it drives me nuts. I got to cut it and stuff.
You see me when I'm on my boat, it's going like one of these.
It just folded back.
It's like a dog looking out the window.
You got to breed that thing, man. All right. So what do we got? What are we looking here? So I guess, Tim, explain to us these little points here that we were talking about here. Okay, that first one, especially.
Okay, so last minute-itis, right? And only going to be a minute are phrases that I've coined in my own little lexicon. Workers get hurt because of last minute-itis, right?
Yeah.
I got to go get that hammer off the edge of the 30th floor. I'm only going to be a minute or last minute-itis, right? And they fall. They get impaled or they die,
yeah.
Right? Taking that shortcut, right? Only going to be a minute. The other one, I don't need to tie off. Yeah, sure. I'm 500 feet in the air. I'm only going to be a minute. Yeah. Next thing you know, we're doing an investigation. It's on the news.
I had a dollar for that one.
Right. And then looking at safety costing versus investing in safety. I had a conversation with another one of my mentors this morning, and we kind of hashed this one out a little bit, but it's not the physical cost. Like sometimes it's the money part, but it's, you know, when the ministry recommended that in elevated work platforms, they use a non-shock absorbing adjustable lanyard, right? That's a cost.
Sure.
Right? They're not requiring, they're recommending. But a lot of people are going to go, what's wrong with my SRL? which by self-attracting lanyard. What's wrong with this doubled up shock absorbing lanyard?
Yeah, no, safety is definitely fluid, and new challenges end up giving new solutions, yeah. Right? And you know, construction is always it's variables, man. Mm-hmm. All kinds of variables and different ways to do the same job, right? And even with a different task that we implement. Or that are being implemented on the project, you know, you got to take a look at it and understand the scope of the work and come up with solutions, man, on how to do this. Like, we're going to set up a scaffold on the side of a four-story building. Okay, what do the regulations say about setting up a scaffold? What are the requirements for a scaffold? And here's the trickiest one. While I'm building a scaffold, what do I tie off to?
That's the classic go-to question.
Well, no, I've come up with a solution for that, right? But there are solutions, but it takes time to implement those solutions. It also takes money to implement. You got to buy some extra lifelines.
Yeah, but here's a question for you guys.
Oh, here we go.
Obviously, with new construction techniques.
Tell us.
At what point does safety become a conversation beyond the idea of creativity and constructing? So it's like, let's say you're building a dwelling or some sort of tower or some sort of fixture. And it's not your standard go-to scaffold apparatus or what have you. You need something specialized.
Sure.
To be safe in there.
Yeah.
Do the architects and the engineers and the designers start talking about safety and how this is going to get done at the beginning? Or do they wait for the constructor and the builder to actually start bringing
that up? That's a whole other ball of wax, yeah, too, right?
To be honest with you, I don't know if the architects and when they design these things, because some of these high-rise buildings, Tim, and you can attest to it, it's like, holy cow, what was this architect smoking when he designed this? Well,
I'm going like, let's go back with the Chunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably implemented all kinds of new safety ideas building that thing, right?
Well, see, and that's the thing, though. The engineer, the designer, the architect, the owner of the project, I'm going to go out on a limb, and probably they don't really think about the safety of how we're going to get this thing
how
built.
How is a guy going to get in this tight little corner?
I'm pretty confident they don't have that conversation.
I mean, it's possible that they do, though, you know?
Well, here's a smaller example. You got your stick framing. You've got a grand foyer. Mm-hmm. That's 2-3 stories tall.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got off that, you've got like a winding staircase that goes up to the second floor.
Sure.
Right here on the third floor is a chandelier.
How's the electrician going to get in there?
Let alone how is the homeowner going to change the light bulb? How's the electrician going to put the box in the ceiling?
Yeah.
Scaffold.
Potentially, or chances are it's going to be a 20-foot extension ladder, a 2x10, and if he's lucky, some rope.
I saw that video on Instagram the other day.
Right? Right? So
it's going to be a makeshift monkey scaffold.
Well, but to the point, though, the architect probably didn't think of, and I actually have a rant on that.
They probably didn't care.
No, exactly. They want it to look this way for a reason.
Let them figure it out.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, to your point,
in those tough times with those tough decisions or that scenario, that's where an employer is really tested. Because you're either going to spend a little money to build a scaffold, right, and take the time, or either you're going to spend some money and get an elevated work platform and take the time, or you're going to set up some ladders and some planks and do some makeshift.
Is it going to cost you or are you going to invest?
Right?
Here's a question for you that it just came into my mind.
Sure.
In a scaffold, does a worker have to be tied off?
When you're building it?
A worker is exposed to a fall. In this case,
there's guardrails and everything around the scaffold.
If a worker is exposed to a fall, then that worker is required to be protected from falling.
So it has to be tied off in a scaffold application.
If there are no guardrails, then yes.
If there's no guardrails.
But keep in mind, what are you tied off to while you're installing guardrails?
So no, let's get to the fact. I'm comparing to elevated lift and scaffold.
Yeah.
Are they required to both have tied off harnesses?
So elevated work platforms, you need to be protected from ejection while it's in motion.
If it's in fixed position,
you're not required to
and you're raised and there's guardrails, you just can't step on the guardrail.
No, once you step above the guardrail system, then the guardrails are ineffective.
But you don't require a harness tied off.
What the regulation says is that you're only required to be protected or tied off in an elevated work platform when it's in motion.
Yeah.
And that's where we get policy from the builder or the constructor, 100% tie off 100% of the time.
Yeah, so they're going above and beyond. So some builders
but
will
according
be like,
to the law,
it's only when it's in motion.
Right.
Okay. All right. Just curious.
Yeah. So the
same thing with the cherry picker. Yep. Only when it's in motion.
Only when it's in motion.
When you're driving it.
Yeah.
But if you're working from it, well, as long as you're in the bucket. Motion
can be vertical too.
straight. Any motion at all.
Yeah. What's the boss say? 50 shades of safety.
50 yeah, shades of safety?
There's a lot of various degrees here.
But no.
That conjures up all kinds of rope and shit like that.
Oh, here we go. Here, aisle 13 at Home Depot.
Oh, for all you kinky people out there, man. All right, let's jump into some of these.
Hey, today here. Oop,
that's loud.
Today is incident and accident reporting. Why do you got to do it?
Yeah, that's a good question. And you can watch the rest of that on Instagram.
On Instagram and YouTube.
Yep.
And TikTok.
Oh, so here you go. Here's some examples of some great scaffolding.
Yeah, right. This is, you know, cost versus investment. They could have invested time.
Oh, those are just engineer joists.
Yeah, that's just
what are you talking about?
On the weakest point, the one on the right there.
Yeah.
That's an engineer joist on its weakest point, laying flat.
Yes.
Yes. Right? I guaranteed when engineer signed off on that.
No, of course not.
No. Right? And then this one here. These are anchor straps.
To the scaffold platform?
That they were flying it with anchor straps, not slings.
To, as far as I know, half-inch ply. It's half-inch ply. It's not three-quarter ply.
Three-quarter ply.
Let's talk about this first one for a second. So this is always challenging, and this is the challenge. The employer sends the workers to go do the job, and with their standard equipment, ladders and whatever, and they look at this and like, holy shit. We don't have the tools to do this. How are we going to do this? So,
I just saw that ladder in the back.
Yeah, there's some Mickey Mouse shit going on here, man. That's ugly. But that being said, I understand it. Yeah. I understand why they do it.
I don't.
Okay. Because they got to get the job done, Manny. Right? And this is where it comes the pressure and organizing and planning a
job.
I'm
going to lose my job. I'm going to get fired if I don't do this. Get it done today.
Of course. What do you think is going
to happen? I'm coming there tomorrow to see the finished work, not the progress work.
I call this on-site engineering. That's what I call it. Where you got whatever you got.
I've never seen that stamp.
No. There's no stamps.
But they always come back to, well, the constructor's supposed to give me this. No, they're not. Nor in the law does it say the constructor shall.
No.
The employer... Listen, right?
You know,
makes it challenging.
It is definitely challenging. But again, guys, don't forget, you got to be in the position of the worker when you're looking at this. You know, the supervisor, that's a different position. The supervisor knew what was going on. They know what tools and equipment they have. They should have planned this thing better, etc.
Yeah.
But on the worker end, you're like, fuck, I only got these tools. I only got this equipment. My boss is telling me to go up there. If I say no, am I going to have this job next week? Right? And there's a whole section in the act that deals with reprisal. You can't get fired for voicing safety concerns. But there's a loophole to that. It's called seasonal layoffs or shortage of work. And you're done. So, you know, I understand
this. So it's the fear of termination.
Isn't there always a fear of termination when you don't do what you're told?
I mean, this got resolved with a conversation.
Which is good.
And what was the resolution?
We got them to move the scaffolding over, get another couple sections. In this case, the constructor helped out, stepped up, gave another couple sections of scaffolding. We did a toolbox talk on erecting a scaffold, but we educated the workers, and the workers got it done safely.
Which is the goal,
100%. Right?
But this is an example of improper planning, not enough equipment, not enough thought process going into it and stuff like that. That's an example of.
I'm in a hurry. Last minute itis.
Yeah. That's dangerous, man.
It's crazy.
Well, listen, it's not the worst I've seen.
No, I can imagine. No. Okay.
And don't get me wrong. You know, as an inspector too, you can, well, let me see the engineer drawing for this. And there's not going to be engineer drawings for it. And the reality is that a lot of this on-site engineering happens too. And here, let me burst some more bubbles. You look at guardrails on the second floor. The carpenters are building guardrails.
Yeah. Staircase, you're talking about,
guardrails around the second floor.
Yeah.
Okay, because they're still building up high. So you go look at these guardrail systems. How would you attach a guardrail system? Nails or screws?
Screws. I know, but screws have a shear force.
Okay.
I know.
It's supposed
but
to
I told you the common
the
answer.
The engineering drawing will say screws. But that being said, you look at these guardrail systems. There's guardrail systems. I would not even tie my dog to them. I go up to them and I touch them like this and they wobble. They got about a foot wobble.
The hockey stick's all messed up.
What did they use to secure them? Nails?
Of course. One nail, two nails.
Finishing nails?
Sometimes it's good from far and far from good. Right?
That's the challenge, right?
You know, it looks like guardrail. All these guys have nice guardrails, and you get closer and you see one nail holding up the 2x4.
I'm not gonna,
you, there's no chance that that guardrail is going to withstand the required weight that it's supposed to withstand.
You know, the one that I do disagree with regarding guardrail, and I get it, but I disagree with it.
Which one?
The bottom rail.
Why? Oh, the toe kick. The
yeah. Why do you disagree with that?
I get it, because you could drop something and it can roll off, and you can then
kick it out.
Sure, kick it out, right? I disagree with it because it's always in the way of progressing work. So you're always removing it to get work done.
I've heard
that's the reason why I disagree with it. You don't always have to remove the middle or the top.
Yeah, but see, that application that we're talking about is in low-rise construction, right?
Yeah.
Because when you get into high-rise, you got manufactured guardrail systems and engineered guardrail systems. Different. And they're right, so different guardrail
systems. And they have the toe kick one too?
It's the bottom of it.
Yeah.
There's a thing there, right? There's the blocking there. But yeah, you're right, man. You know, and low-rise, and this is why low-rise, I think, is a bit of the wild, wild west too, right? Because, you know, you try to do stuff, but stuff happens, it doesn't happen.
You're in the middle of a farm field somewhere, yeah.
Right? So
that's just my two cents. I don't, like, I'm just,
I know, man.
Disagree with it 95% of the time.
All right, what nonsense do we got here, Tim? Break this down.
What is that?
That's the new chin straps for the hard hats.
Chin strap. That was a guy's hard hat. Didn't think he thought he'd get away with it.
Is that a bedpan?
Oh, no, it's a hard hat missing all the guts from the inside. If you figured and I wouldn't know.
He's wearing that.
He's wearing it over top of.
So what is it, like right over his
eyes? He had a hoodie on. A hoodie and a ball cap.
Oh. And he got busted.
How'd you find that, Tim? Did you ask the guy to take off his hard hat?
Yeah, I'm going. It looks a little bit loose. Let me. You know, I was going to educate him on how to adjust his hard hat properly to fit it. And he takes it off and went, what the hell?
Surprise.
Where
are the guts?
Dude, where? Some guy brought a liner from a Kevlar helmet. A military issue Kevlar bought the liner for his hard hat. Oh, I got this in Colombia. Perfect. So Colombian, you know, standard for safety is going to be fantastic in Canada. I want
a Kevlar hard hat.
But no, it wasn't a Kevlar. It was just a liner. It was just a liner.
I want a Kevlar suit and a vest too.
So that was fun. That was
the best one I found with hard hats is like the ones with a couple holes drilled in on the side.
I sent you that picture, didn't I?
For what reason?
With ventilation. Manny, come on. Well, you don't have holes in your hard hat?
They've got...
They don't have holes in the hard hat because... Well,
Milwaukee came out with one with a fan, right?
Yeah.
No, that was the T-Move version. I posted one of those.
No, version.
It had solar panels on the front and a fan. And it's designed to keep you cool.
I had a guy actually build one.
Oh, wow.
Drilled through his hard hat, put a Milwaukee, you know, the little battery, and a fan. I'm going, that's genius, but...
On-site engineering, man.
On-site engineering.
If he got struck with something...
It would disintegrate.
It's on-site operation.
Yeah. Right? And the ministry looks at it, did you modify that hard hat? Well, yeah. Okay.
Now,
how do you plead? How do you plead?
What do you mean? That's like the N95 mask with the hole cut out so you can put the cigarette in.
I've never done that.
Holy cow.
I did that on P100.
How are you supposed to smoke with a mask on, Manny? Like, come on, man. Ridiculous.
This one was crazy. This was it's a cat excavator. If you notice the pin that's holding this to the arm, those are 12-inch survey spikes.
Really?
Some of these things just don't belong here.
There's quite a eclectic group of talented engineers on these construction sites.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely some shenanigans there, man.
I rolled onto this site, saw this. I shut this one down. And maybe 20 minutes after I talked to the constructor about this one, our friend from the Ministry of Labor showed up.
Friends?
Everybody, I'm thinking most people know this guy. He's not there anymore.
Don't say any names on the show.
No. But so he rolls on and he gets really hot. So we've dealt with it. It's been tagged out. We're not using it till it gets fixed. Okay.
But one thing's for sure: not every safety professional would catch that.
It'd be hard to catch that.
Yeah.
Well,
if it's in motion.
If the machine's moving around, you know,
you wouldn't think to catch that. Look for that.
Listen, and again, that's the tricky part about being a safety professional. You got to kind of understand a lot of these components and how the functions and how the machinery.
Their thought process.
What drew my attention was this: was the bend
that is warped.
That's what drew me to the piece of equipment that made me take a look. I mean, the front windshield was shattered. There was coffee cups and apple juice bottles all over the cab.
Apple juice bottles.
Gatorade?
Apple juice. Don't drink the apple juice on the job site, boys and girls.
All right, what next shenanigans we have here?
Fall protection. So
the pendulum effect.
He's tied off, absolutely, except the anchor point is way on the other side. So when he does fall, if he does fall, he's going to just follow the dotted line and on the ground you go.
Pretty much. That's what you need. Well, he's going to take the ladder out with him.
Yep.
So, and this is common, man. This is common in terms of, you know, A for effort because you tied off, but you didn't do the right calculations because if you were to fall, you'd still hit the ground.
It's a B minus.
What's he building? Is that the bricklayer? What's going on there?
No, it's a carpenter he's just doing that part of the roof.
Oh, he's just doing a little overhang. I got it. All right.
So what would be the solution in this case? The solution in this case, Tim?
The other window.
You can go with that other window, right? He could have used a boom lift. Could have used a boom lift, right?
That one's a little trickier.
I mean, because of that styrofoam, right? There's definitely anchor points on the other side of that styrofoam,
yeah.
Right? That he could have repaired.
True.
Once he was done with.
So basically the solution is position your anchor in a way that, based on where you're working, if you were to fall,
you don't hit the ground. I'd rather you dangle than hit the ground.
What's the time limit on dangling in a harness?
You have 15 minutes to enact your safety plan, 17 minutes, and you start getting into suspension trauma.
Yeah, and keep in mind, those numbers...
15, 17, based on weight.
Based on weight, based on how the harness was put on. There's a couple variable 15, factors 17, here.
17, huh? Yeah. On average.
Could be a little bit
less. Could be a little bit more.
As far as I know, you can don't quote me on this, 15 minutes to enact the rescue plan. Because he's got 17 minutes before he could start going into shock because of suspension trauma.
Because he's constricting his vital arteries.
No, he's not. Well, yeah,
because of the femoral
artery, right?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
All the blood is pooling in your lower extremities, so it's pumping half the volume, right? So that's where you start getting dizzy and stuff. That's why we have those suspension straps that you can tie them up, and you can actually start standing up and down, because the way the body works, it's a combination of the musculature. The way it works, it's actually pushing blood through the system as well as the heart. So by constricting in your muscles.
Is it fatal?
What?
After, if you constrict it so much?
Hypovolemic shock. No, not hypovolemic shock. That's rapid loss of blood.
You're restricting the blood flow back to the
but
heart.
But they used to say, if you're in suspension trauma, to get them up against a wall, like lean them up with their knees to their chest. Or if they're unconscious, get them on the ground in a recovery position, knees to chest, and slowly open their legs up, right? Because that way, all the deoxygenated blood doesn't rush to the system and overpower. They've now changed that through first aid, that the faster you get that blood flowing purposely, the better off the casualty is, and their chance of recovery is greater chance of recovery. It's better, and so you have to be on standby to make sure A, they don't go into shock, and if you do, you know, how are we going to deal with that part of it, and they may stop breathing, so CPR, right? But it's better to do CPR, right, and get that blood flowing faster at the proper volume than, right, so there's certain risks. Yeah. But if they fall, you're calling 911. That's simple EMS is on its way.
If we go based on any, like, the videos we post on Instagram and stuff, when guys are hanging off the side of buildings and stuff, you know, the recovery for this is either you pull the guy back up or you rescue him from the bottom, right? There's only a couple options here.
Basically 10 or so minutes.
You got 17 minutes before it starts getting problematic.
Depends on variables, right? Yep. But you don't want to be hanging for too long.
Nope.
There's a reason you're hanging too.
I mean, imagine falling off a 95 meter wind turbine.
Yeah, like that video I posted the other day. Did you see that one with the guy on the wind turbine? He's all the way at the top, and it's a hell of a view from the top. And he has a double lanyard system. The guy's fully tied off. And again, I'm guessing in those situations you would use travel restraint and not fall arrest, because you don't want to be there hanging beside moving blades or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the blades are locked in place when that's happening.
But that would make more sense.
The recovery. How do you get them?
Well, you use a tactile.
You got to pull his ass up, man.
But there's mechanical advantage for that. So when I was on the wind farm, that's what we had mechanical advantage. We had the 3M tactile. So we could reach down, hook them up.
And then winch them in.
And we could bring them up.
Yeah.
We also had enough rope. We could lower them to the ground, depending on which one was the best way to do it.
And this is a prime example of depending on the construction that's taking place or the scope of work that's taking place. It's dependent on the selection of fault protection equipment that you're using, number one.
Yeah.
And number two, if shit was to hit the fan and this worker is hanging off wherever, how the hell are we going to get to this guy?
Yeah. We had volunteer firefighters going, I'm not going up there. So yeah. Don't worry, we have it. We have the plan. We'll get him to you on the ground so you can take them to the hospital.
Right.
We'll get them to you.
And coming to emergency plans and rescue and stuff like that too. And you know, you got to take a look at what happens if this was a tunnel and the guy's, you know, 300 meters into a tunnel and
he gets in.
How's the ambulance? How are the paramedics going to get in there?
Skateboard, mechanic slide.
Wow.
Right? So you got to kind of think of if shit is to hit the fan, what is my response going to be? Right? And again, it's easy to write it out. Oh, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. Mm. But adrenaline takes over. You know, fear takes over. Response, you try to do your best. And only after going through situations like this or being properly trained or, you know, as a medic or military and stuff like that, you know, only then you can actually respond in a, like a calm, cool, collected way, you know,
experiencing that for the first time, you're not calm, cool.
No, it's like a paramedic shows up to their first car crash. You know, I'm sure their training kicks in, but you know, it's the first time, right? But then you show up to your 100th one, you're like,
process it much later. Yeah.
It's even being as an MOL inspector and responding to fatalities. I remember my first one, man, I was panicking. I didn't know what to do. You know, you're seeing all kinds of different things. I did, but you know, my first fatality was a lot different than my last fatality.
Of course.
Right? Or my first investigation. And it's just,
here's a scenario for you guys.
Shoot.
How often does the person trying to help the person, let's say he is dangling there, and now the person forgets all the safety requirements to get to that person?
Yeah. That's part of the problem.
And so that happens, right?
The rescuer becomes part of the rescue scenario.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? That's why you have to train once a year. That's why you have to practice. You have to have competent people, right? Not all people that have first aid, and I've taught enough courses. Most of the people that I teach, I look at them going, chances are you're going to see blood.
You're
going to pass out. So, you know, and in the course that we teach, there's a lot of investigation pictures that I've taken, and they're not cartoons.
Yep.
They are the real deal. Missing fingers, legs that are been cut off, whole nine yards. If you're puking and passing out in my course, you're not the first aider. You're the guy going to go grab me the 911. Now we know where you are. Yeah. Right. And it's kind of the reason why we teach it the way we teach it is for that specific
thing. You have to discover who's who.
It's not it's to let them know. This is what it's really going to look like.
Yeah.
It's not.
One thing is a movie. It's another
thing. Yeah, it's not makeup. Reality,
this is the real deal. Yeah. Like simple thing, like, you know, buddy gets his thumb cut off with a bandsaw.
Yep.
Right? To me, it's no big deal. If you saw that, you know, or anybody else, there's a good chance. Oh.
Yeah, how they react to it. Yeah. And the crazy thing about construction is, you know, it's not like, hey, let me rephrase this. The types of fatalities that happen in construction, they're not like...
Oh, they're not pretty.
They can be really messy, man.
Crushed by,
and chopped this off. And there's crazy shit that happens, man.
I've seen a little bit of blood in situations.
I've seen guys get porcupined.
Porcupined.
Front
or back?
Worker, fall arrest, rebar.
Oh, it bailed.
Porcupine.
The shish kebab.
I was just watching the uncut version of Rambo: Last Blood.
There you go.
Pretty graphic, man.
Pretty, yeah, but it's from a safety professional standpoint. Yeah.
But the point I was bringing up was the worker coming in to help.
Yeah, no. Listen, we've had cases where, you know, a worker gets trapped in the trench. Another worker jumps in to try to save them. It was a dad and a son and two brothers. That happened, man.
Workplace or WorkSafe BC.
No, that one was the sewer where the dad went in, and then the two sons were at the top, and they're like, hey, dad, and the dad didn't say anything. Then the next son went in, hey, no answer. Then the next guy went in, all three of them died inside the sewer.
And the apprentice went, nope, I'm going to call 911.
Yeah. Yeah, it was something like that, man.
It was crazy.
But that happened.
It was a barge, but yeah.
So. But yeah, people trying to save or trying to respond can also get caught up in the situation, right?
Absolutely. Well, what was that that scaffold collapse or that floor collapse a couple of years back in Hamilton? Buddy was crushed underneath all the scaffolding.
Hamilton or London?
I can't remember Hamilton or London.
The one that came down, we posted a video on it. The whole thing came down.
Yeah, and Buddy got crushed underneath, and another guy, one of his buddies went to go save him, and he became a fatality too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he...
But that's instinct of a construction worker.
Sometimes, yeah, but it,
unfortunately,
yeah,
I'm just saying.
Yeah, oh, for sure. But it's,
you want to get to the person.
You want
trying to help, but you're putting yourself at risk now.
Of course, exactly, and that's but part of the issue. That's why we got to practice.
Of course, but again, the same thing goes to first responders on a construction site, right? Like, the guy gets buried in a trench, the fire department shows up, they're jumping in, they're trying to do this, they're trying to shore it, they're trying to support it. You know, even with the Metron case, when I got there, that's the quadruple fatality where the swing stage opened up. You got the swing stage in two pieces, hanging and just dangling, you know, snowing and everything. And you have firefighters and the police officers standing underneath that thing. And it was only being held by a piece of airline cable, the steel cable. And, you know, you're like, the first thing I did was, okay, everyone stop and get out of there. Because that's all you needed was a piece of swing stage to come now crashing down. Kill a couple police officers or paramedics or anybody. Yeah. Right? We already had four dead. We didn't need more.
Right?
So, yeah, responding to these situations is tricky, man.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I interrupted you.
Yeah, no worries.
Cherry picker.
So what nonsense is happening over here?
This conversation started with, why would a safety guy want to talk to you? He's driving down
down the road?
Yeah, down the road. It hasn't been asphalted yet on a low rise.
Okay.
But his leg straps aren't done up. On his harness.
And he's right? Driving.
He's driving along. So he's anchored. He's got his lanyard to the anchor point, but the leg straps aren't done up.
So if he falls,
if he gets ejected, he's coming out of that harness.
And there was a fatality on Ontario Place. Oh no, it wasn't an ejection. It flipped over.
That was rental company. Wasn't that
one. But the other fatality. What was that one?
Oh, sorry. And he's got a strap attached to the top guardrail, which is attached to the lanyard.
Nice.
Because you need a little extra length.
What's going on with those wires above there?
Oh, those ones are actually far enough away.
Okay.
And he was coming down the road to get to another house.
What's with the board?
Oh, that was a workbench.
Or is that for him to stand on top so he can reach the extra levels?
The worker suggested to me that it was a workbench for his tools.
Man.
The conversation was, why would the safety guy want to talk to you?
Why do you need a workbench on a moving apparatus that can go where you want to get to? I don't understand why you need a workbench. Oh, you need a step up, but you got a machine that will go.
I give enough rope to hang.
Shenanigans, Manny.
On-site engineering. I get it.
On-site engineering.
I like that. On-site
engineering. I need an extra 2 inches.
Okay.
What's next on our list here?
Oh, you're never going to run out of material.
Oh, never. So if you notice the propane bottle with the Tiger torch and the worker smoking over top of the confined space.
Wow.
Where's the contravention there?
On in the middle of Queens Quay at Lower Jarvis.
They obviously tested the propane for leaks.
Obviously.
Right, and propane's heavier than air.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know.
Mm-hmm. But it's the lit cigarette that got my attention.
Man, I posted something like that too. Where was it? They were smoking in a gas station or something like that.
There's methane gas coming out of that sewer, isn't it?
Well, this wasn't my project. I was...
Yeah.
I was at Sugar Beach taking a picture of a lake freighter and saw that and went, oh, that's gonna be good. Click.
Fuck.
On-site engineering.
Yeah, that one. Who jerry rigged that thing, man? Look at that death machine, man.
Installers. Wood floor. Wood floor installers.
Was that on the floor?
It was on the floor. Actually, no. It's on a 6-foot folding table. With a hole cut out so that the sawdust can come down, but it's a skill saw mortar and drive.
Oh, that's a makeshift little job site.
That thing's a Frankenstein.
Yeah, he made this on a wing and a prayer. But he had a guard.
He had a guard on the side.
Yeah, he had a blade guard for it.
What the hell's the guard for?
To make it look good.
That's scary.
Holy shit.
Yeah. No, I use it all the time.
Whose blade is that? Blue?
Cobalt?
Is it
with the K?
Cobalt from Lowe's?
Yeah.
Okay,
is
all
that
right.
What it says there?
Yeah, I think I think he's right. Yeah, it's a cobalt blade.
I don't know, but yeah, you get that sometimes. Some Frankenstein equipment, man. You know, a bit of this and a bit of that, and mix it all together, and now you got this thing.
Yeah,
ta-da!
The electrical tape up extensions.
Yeah. But what's the rationale behind building something like this? Like, why would you want to build it? Why don't you just go buy the appropriate tool or equipment that you need?
That's the question you had to ask. So why don't you guys just go get that DeWalt? How come you're not using that DeWalt that's sitting beside you? It doesn't work. Fool this. Then why did you pick up that?
Portuguese is getting better.
Why did you pick up that? Like, that makes no sense. Like, yeah. That's got to go.
But see, like, you know, man, as a, you get on site and you see this crazy shit.
It's low rise.
And yeah, low rise. I don't know what's going on in low rise.
It's a different animal.
It is a different animal. It's a different machine out there, and it's a bunch of cowboys. But you know, you see these things and you want to help them. You know, you want to help solve some of these problems. You don't want people using stuff like this, right? This machinery equipment. And then you start asking the supervisor questions like, why would you even let this thing on site?
He's got 500 homes, though. He can't get to every home.
I get it. There's always an excuse. You know, I didn't know. I didn't see. I told him to do it this way. He did it another way. I'm not a babysitter.
He didn't
sign in.
He didn't come see me.
Yeah, but even the foreman of this crew, right? The supervisor of this crew.
The owner of the company.
Sure.
Piecework.
It's not like they did not know that this piece of equipment was
questionable.
That's scary, man. I could see that's a flooring company?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see a little bit of a kickback and being thrown right across
the room. Oh, yeah. Or the whole thing just like shake apart.
It comes down to the Frankenstein thing. You know, take pieces from here, take pieces from there. And, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm all about ingenuity and I'm all about on-site engineering. Sometimes you gotta do it within the parameters, but obviously that's not within the parameters.
Those kinds of saws, they bite.
A little bit.
Yeah, you don't want to get your body parts stuck in there. That's for sure.
Any more?
What, you want to see more?
No, I'm just curious if there's any more.
Always more.
I think I sent you guys like 8, but I've got like 50.
You know what I'd love to see is I'd love to see the executives breaking all the rules when they get on job sites.
Oh, the white collar boys?
Oh, I've had those conversations.
That happens, right?
That should be a social experiment. All the blue collar boys and girls go work in the offices for 2 weeks. We take all the white collars and put them in the job site.
Unfortunately, I think all the blue collars would be sent down to HR.
Oh, the, yeah, HR.
And then all the white collar would be like kicked off the site. Yeah, to the hospital.
They'd be locked up. Finger in the first 3 minutes.
The camera should be panning from them with the shovel experience, and then pan right to the paramedics waiting for them on the side.
They'd be locked in the blue bomber.
That would be an awesome reality show, I swear to God. Sitting in your president's desk with your dirty, muddy boots on the table like this.
I would love to see that.
I would too. I would pay money to see that, man. Well, listen, I think, Tim, this is enough stuff in terms of pictures.
Every day is different. You're never not going to see something happening.
There's people that need help, man.
Nothing ever surprises me anymore. Soon as I say, well, I've never seen that before, something else comes up.
Yeah.
And you're just like, wow.
What were your thoughts on the King and Spadina?
Oh, so many trucks hitting so many things. Like, how do you not know? Did you disconnect the buzzer that said, dude, your bucket's up? Or the
how do you truck? Not know that bucket's up?
I have theories. I have theories, but
Driver theories?
Driver theories, yeah.
It was an accident. Shit happens.
Yeah,
they're shut down King's,
but I know. But it's a poorly managed city with the system that we have regarding public transit. You just basically killed an artery that's going to be down for how long?
They're still fixing it now.
No, today,
this is what they say. It was going to take a week or something to fix it or whatever.
Right? I mean, look at how many dump trucks hit bridges.
Yeah. On BC. Have you been following BC, man?
I'm worried about the 401.
What's going on? They're hitting
every overpasses what, it there? Seems like every other month, a truck driver, a dump truck driver.
You know, speaking about Elon, like, why can't they friggin' come up with a device or some sort of technology that no truck could be on the road without a warning that something is not engaged correctly?
This has been discussed plenty of years.
It's MTO stuff. That's
federal. Why not just like all these vehicles now have to have a warning before you actually take it out of park?
Especially the dumps. The dump
all
trucks,
your personal cars, you can't start the engine without putting your foot on the brake. All the new vehicles.
Yeah, yeah, the push button ones like mine. Yeah, yeah.
You have to have your foot on the brake to engage the motor from starting.
Did I tell you I drive a 2007?
No, I get it. But these dump trucks, all these vehicles, it should be the same thing. You cannot until there's like a clearance. Or like pilots with airplanes, they walk around the plane to make sure that everything's there.
You would definitely
before you take off, you walk around.
That's a get out of your cab idea.
And walk around,
bro. But you're not allowed to wear sandals on a job site.
Ma,
Crocs okay?
Crocs are
they're steel toe Crocs.
Just make
they've
them.
Got the vibrant.
Yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah. But it's true, man. They definitely should put in some type of safety device that disengages the vehicle until the cab is, the bed of the truck is down. Or the
I think you got to get out of the cab and walk around before you take
you
off.
You should, but then you're relying on human error. You know, and sometimes you got to rely on human, and you also got to rely on the technology component.
It's last minute itis. I got to get this truck out of here.
Yeah, the dump trucks move. They're in.
They're out, they're only making money when they move.
Yeah. Right?
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit something, that dump truck ain't moving.
Right. No. But it's the risk a lot of people are willing to take, unfortunately. Right?
So that's where we come in handy. We try to educate and
of course
try to change it, try to make it better.
It's definitely challenging being a safety professional. You know, you're dealing with the human element, the psychology element, you're dealing with the production element, you're dealing with the employer element, whether they're invested in safety, whether they give a shit or whether they don't. You know, and you ask them, they always give a shit, but you know, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah, and the difference between corporate safety and safety consulting is we're there once a week.
It's true.
So, you know, whose interest do they think we have in, right? Is it the interest of the worker, interest of our client?
Yeah.
Right? And you've got the corporate safety guys that work for the big construction companies. That's their job. They're on site for like 3, 4, 5 years, right? There's definitely complacency in there, but they look at safety differently than you or I would as coming in fresh from, you know, I do a high rise one day and I'm doing low rise the next, then I'm going to a cookie factory.
Yeah, I know. Right? So experience, right? and versatility and, you know, the ability to jump into any of these scenarios and still manage and navigate it, that's definitely one of the hallmarks of a good safety professional. You know what I mean? But
what's the best way to communicate to workers?
I wish I could use a paint gun, but
that's a good one. I like that one. You show up on site.
Listen, you have to read your audience.
Yeah,
it's very important. You have to understand your audience. Yeah. You know what I mean?
That's what I mean. So you got to communicate with them, as you said at the very beginning. You got to be on their level.
Well, like
they do.
The video I watched from you guys that I saw yesterday. The Portuguese guy. You're the supervisor. 2 days, 2 days. And Manuel Ish and all that. I've had that conversation.
Really?
Of course. That conversation may be one of the most frequent conversations that happen in construction.
It's amazing how many guys don't speak no English when they're in trouble.
Yeah, when it comes to the safety guy, I know speaker.
Right, so like I'm learning Spanish. And then the following
weekend, he's reading Charles Dickens.
Exactly. Out of all the authors to pick.
This it was season. A cold bleep.
You don't even know Dane Wynn Whitby.
Once upon a time.
Every story starts that, but it goes to it was a cold. Yeah. But I get what you're saying. Like, I'm trying to figure out how do we speak to these people so they're not.
These people are us.
They're not in fear. You know what I'm saying?
Especially with training. And Tim can speak to this. I'm sure he does a lot more training than I do. You know, you have to read your audience, mm-hmm. man. And you have to relate. You have to be relatable. You know? And I think this is where safety also misses the mark sometimes. Oh, safety is important for the benefit of blah, 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 blah. And you're already falling asleep in the class.
Yeah.
Right? You gotta spice some things up, man. You got to make sure people don't fall asleep. You got to be relatable. Tell some stories. Tell us about your adventures. I don't know.
That's why I don't teach first aid anymore. Because all the stories that are part of the course that I teach.
Nobody likes them.
Well, no, they're my stories. And I hate to use the word PTSD, right? But I get re-traumatized every time I tell these stories.
Yeah, well,
because these are things that actually happened to me, but it gets the point across. But yeah, it's like we were talking on the phone the other day, and the fact that, you know, we can speak in crayon, right? We can speak in construction. We can speak in at the worker's level. If you can explain to them in a way that they understand, not just language, but using terminology that they can understand.
For sure.
Now you've got mutual respect, and you know, like I have several different characters that I play on a daily basis. That safety guy is a complete made-up character. That safety guy also got me working with the Ministry for Labor in Grenada in the West Indies.
Yeah, yeah, as I saw that, man. That was pretty cool.
Right? So that's a different character. When I'm talking to the owner of a company, I'm a completely different character. Yes, sir. No, sir. I'm using different verbiage. I'm using different sentences.
You're reading the person.
Right. If I'm talking to a worker, be it a carpenter or a forming carpenter, right, I'm talking to them at their level because luckily I personally have that experience. I've done that job. I've swung that hammer. Right. Yeah. So it's, but it, you gotta, it, it, it's a, it's
definitely got to be a bit of a chameleon and wear a few different hats in this business, especially if you're going from a boardroom to a job site, you know. So there's different, you know, even with this podcast, you know, Philip, maybe you shouldn't swear, and Philip, maybe you shouldn't say this, you know, because these are safety people that come from boardrooms. And I go, I get it, man. But like a majority of the people that follow and watch, you know, we gotta swear a bit, man, because this is reality.
If you use dumb fuckery and spell it with a PH.
Boys, Tim, anything else you want to add on top of that dumb fuckery?
I just want to say a couple of things. It's what's really scary, and I think that everybody who's listening or everybody's on a job site, is that all of these stories that you guys share, they're from fact.
They really happened to us.
You guys didn't make them up.
No,
they're all from fact. What? Scenarios that it's not what if this is going to happen. It's like what has happened.
Yeah, I like I said, man, this is all just odds and probability. If you're in construction long enough, chances are you're going to, as an employer, you're going to have an injury on your job site.
So maybe everybody that's a worker on site, like you said at the very beginning here, you said, how can we do that safely?
Yeah,
that's every why we scenario had you walk talks, into, how do I go to the porta potty safely?
Hey, well, but listen, there's a danger here. And I just want to put this out too. There's a danger too of too much safety, too much bureaucracy, too much red tape, too much bullshit.
Yes.
You know, I'm a strong believer in common sense. And I also know that common sense isn't that common, you know, but I don't need a procedure on how to tie my shoelaces.
No,
I don't need that. Oh, shoelaces are, if you don't adequately tie your shoes, you know, you may trip and die. No, man, like, come on. I call it bubble wrap safety, where, you know, let's wrap you completely in bubble wrap and make sure you never get a splinter. I don't. Construction is risky, man.
Yeah, I agree.
It's dangerous, and the only job that we got to do is make sure that we do this dangerous job as safely as possible, as cautious as possible.
And that's, you know what? And nor in the green book does it say the safety guy shall. But I explain it this way: I'm the hair in the back of your neck that stands up. I'm that voice in the back of your head that says maybe I shouldn't do that.
Yeah, man.
I'll call you out for it. We'll have that conversation.
We like to be part of the team. So.
Yeah. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, John.
No, this is awesome.
It was a blast, man. Come back anytime.
Hopefully I don't get fired.
We haven't got fired yet.
I'm pretty sure there's going to be another position available. Yeah, but you anywhere.
Hey, good guys always get good jobs, man. You'll be fine.
You might get a medal.
But your team is a good team. And the guys that you work for,
awesome,
great guys. And shout out to them. And hopefully we'll have him on the show soon, and he can tell us. I think he wants to come and talk about ISO.
Oh, I just realized cobalt.
With a K.
One plus one is two, man.
Yeah, I get it.
But hopefully we have him on the show, and he can talk about ISO and stuff like
ISO
that.
ISO and core, that's a hot button topic for him.
It shouldn't be, but it is.
Which one is better?
No.
We're not going to get into that. Show. That's another show.
Just Merry for Christmas. Another show. Don't
tune into the next one where we'll be talking about those letters.
Oh my god!
Okay.
Oh my god! It's this is level 7 and above safety, because 80% of the employers in construction in Ontario have nothing to do with ISO or core.
Boots and suits. That's definitely.
Is this like Warriors or something like that? What's going on here? Is this different gangs or what's going on here?
Yeah, man. There's different teams.
That's what it is.
Crips versus Bloods, apparently. Yep.
Well, we'll get into that one, man.
Oh, you got to watch it on LinkedIn, man. It's hilarious.
Thanks very much, Tim. Appreciate it. Thanks, Phil, for bringing him in. And always come back. Seriously, when you're ready, man, come back.
Perfect. I'd love to.
That's it.
Take care, boys. Ciao.
You're listening to Safety Corner, powered by TCL and S1. For workers, by workers. Online and in-person health and safety programs and training available in 10-plus languages. Reach out to them at www.mys1.ca and DM them at my_S1 for more information.